I didn't really have any gay friends who were having babies. Then that added a whole different layer, I think. It's like we were so into it. I was so proud to be like one of the only gay people I know to go through this.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
Okay, let's do this. Welcome along. This is the Still Parents podcast supported by Global's Make Some Noise. I'm Dan here, as always, with Ryan and Matt from the Lily May Foundation. How the devil are you?
I'm fine, mate.
Let's have a proper introduction for today's guest. Well, it's very, very early where Christian is. What time is it where you are right now, Christian?
It is 6:21.
6:21 a.m. And where exactly are you?
I'm in Brooklyn, New York.
Brooklyn, New York.
That's our first guest from New York.
Yes.
We haven't had any guests from New York.
You are. Yeah, you are. What's the closest guest we've had to? Is Philadelphia far from you?
No, 2 hours.
Yeah.
No, 2 hours.
For America, that's good,
that's
though.
Just that's like, yeah, around that, the corner. That's far. We can be in Italy in 2 hours. Yeah. So it's Christian Haig.
You got it.
And could you just tell us a little bit about yourself, how old you are and what you do for a living?
Yeah, sure. I am born and raised in New York. I am 46 years old.
No way. How fresh-faced you look, especially at 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I work in real estate here in the city, which is awesome. It's an awesome profession. It's, exciting. I will say it's been really challenging since the loss of our daughter to be selling homes to families.
Yes.
Which has been something very interesting that I've had to deal with recently, but overall it's great. I'm very, all things considered, very happy. And it's been a good year work-wise.
What's the most expensive property you've sold in New York? Because it's quite an expensive place to live, isn't it? I've only ever been once, but just did the tourist thing, didn't I? Went to Times Square, bought an M&M.
I'm in single residence, probably over $10 million US dollars, but I do a lot of condo buildings that are hundreds of millions of dollars.
Wow. Wow.
That's blown us all away.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks for joining the Still Parents podcast.
We want to hear your story, and especially it's interesting bearing in mind what you've also mentioned about with your loss, how it affected and the impact on part of your job and obviously selling houses, anything which brings those triggers too. So what we would like you to do, which we ask all guests, could you take us through the story leading up to the loss of, it was your girl, Josephine Roseanne, is that correct? Which is an absolutely beautiful name. Take as long as you need, give us as much or as little detail, and then throughout the conversation, Matt and Ryan, myself, will come in with some more questions and some thoughts. And with Matt and Ryan also, and the reason why we set this up, being lost parents themselves, if there's anything that you want to ask these gents at any point, feel free to go ahead. So, is there any particular place you'd like to start?
Yeah, so, I've always wanted kids. I think that's the most ironic thing of all. I don't think there's anyone who wanted a child more than me.
Yeah.
I'll say that with 100% confidence.
Yeah.
So I turned 45 and I thought, this is it. This is time to do it. My career is going well. I'm happily married. I own a home. It's just the next milestone to life. And I always thought, I'm going to do adoption. I think there's gay people for a reason. That was always in my head, is to just take in and offer, a home to kids that need it. But then, like I said, I turned 45 that day. I called adoption agencies. And in doing so, I started, talking to one gentleman. He and his husband he worked for an agency, had been trying to adopt, and was taking them years, years and years. So he said, really in your situation, I would consider surrogacy. So it's really the first time then I got pretty psyched about that option, because I thought we can control it.
Yeah.
I thought you're paying a lot of money. It can be on your timeline. It's going to be super easy. Mm. I did my due diligence. I found an awesome surrogacy agency that has an incredible success rate. Mostly it's LGBTQ families.
Feel free to name it if you want.
Yes, it's Miracle Surrogacy.
Okay.
If they get a link, I want a discount on this.
Yeah. On transfer. Are they based in New York?
They're Mexico City.
Oh, Mexico City. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Mexico City, which then added a whole different layer to all of it. It's like I said, I'm in New York. So I reached out to them. I did my due diligence with a lot of agency. You know, everyone sounds great. I met the team there. They were wonderful. I reached out personally, like, you know, just being a sleuth and finding other parents who worked for this agency, and everyone had like great success rates. So I thought, you know, this is guaranteed. This will be on our timeline. Mm. I'm a New Yorker. I like things planned out. It's a very odd thing to do is surrogacy. It's beautiful, but there's so many moving parts. And first, it's just picking out the egg donor, which they basically hand you a folder, and you're then picking out the what you think is the ideal woman who could, you know, be the counterbalance of you.
That right. I was going to ask about that process. And I don't mean to be flippant or whatever the word is. I'm just being an idiot Englishman. I was like, is it some weird egg Tinder? Like where you just
totally. Yeah. Okay. Totally. Redhead, no. Blonde, yes. Brown.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how did you find that process?
I loved it. Are you kidding me? I've never been with a woman. I'm like, this is great. Here we go. What egg am I getting?
Okay.
So that was fun. You know, my husband's from South America. He's from Paraguay. So we wanted, you know.
Oh, wow. Paraguay.
You know. Yeah, yeah.
How did you guys meet?
We met on Tinder.
I love it.
So that's how we sort of then determined who the egg donor was. Not that she looked like Manuel, but, you know, it was similarities. He always said he didn't want to look like the nanny. So then that's, our journey was pretty quick in that sense.
Okay.
We lined up an egg donor. You then go through, you know, we were so lucky. We had 10 healthy embryos. Josephine was our third transfer. So each time they do it, they need to, you know, you find your surrogate.
Yeah.
They do their background check on the surrogate. She goes through all different types of, you know, testing, you know, physical and also, you know, just mental. And Miriam was our surrogate. And I'll happily say her name because she was our, you know, angel on earth who helped us along with this.
What was her name again?
Miriam.
Miriam, right. Okay.
Miriam was set to go. We did the egg transfer. It was successful in Mexico City. They updated us constantly and everything was going fine. Her, you know, she was growing beautifully. So then I flew down to Mexico City to be there for the heartbeat, you know, the ultrasound, the first ultrasound. And we, you know, had a heartbeat and
I think the part of this, I think the thing about this as well, Christian, already you can see in your face, of course, right, the emotion that comes out is that you see that heartbeat for the first time and like you are connected straight away, aren't you? You really are. You know, you're there, you're invested, you're connected. There's no other feeling like it, right?
I had a favorite dinner planned out once I heard the heartbeat. I had it. You know,
What?
So was that the 12-week scan, or was it?
That
was a 12-week scan. Yeah. That was a question I was actually going to ask. The question is that you've obviously both made the decision to go through with the surrogacy, and like you say, you flew down to Mexico City, you went there, you heard the heartbeat and things like that. So your plans as a couple are starting to gain traction and fruition, because like you say, you then start to view were you always going to find out if it was a girl or a boy, or was it something that you wanted to keep as a sort of surprise?
Yeah, we wanted to be surprised.
Okay.
And then my curiosity got the best of me, and I went back and I looked at, you know, the embryo. And listen, as much as I tried to always say, like, oh, I'm not going to get too connected or this and that, the minute they do the embryo transfer, even before the heartbeat, you're in it.
Yeah.
I was in it.
Yeah.
I was in it. I mean, yeah, it's the crushing part. Mm. Yeah.
So from that moment then, which was so around about the 12-week scan and the heartbeat, can you carry on from there?
Yeah. So we didn't tell a lot of people yet. We tried to keep it close to the vest.
Yeah.
Our immediate family knew, and then you know, her sac was perfect. And, you know, everything, every step was perfect. Yeah. You know, and I waited, you know, we're not there, obviously. I was not carrying the baby, but I was carrying the baby.
Yeah.
And it's hard to explain. Mm. You know, I don't know if all dads feel that. I was carrying this baby. It wasn't day to day, but it was, I thought about it second to second.
Sorry if you've already mentioned this. I'm just clarifying. So Miriam, where was she living? Was she in Mexico City or was that?
She's in Mexico. She's in Mexico.
That's quite the journey as well that you have to go on then. I'm guessing to go and see her.
Yeah, it's a journey. And I went the first time for this heartbeat without Manuel, and Miriam only speaks Spanish and Manuel speaks Spanish in the family. I don't. So I wrote a whole little letter that I read in Spanish thanking her.
Yeah.
So it was beautiful. Love, you know, didn't see language.
I'll tell you something. That's a really nice use of terminology. Love doesn't have a language.
It's powerful as well.
It's really powerful because it shows obviously that she was able to provide a safe space for your baby to be able to grow and to nurture. And I know we're going to get into, you know, what happened and so forth, but also giving you and Manuel the opportunity as a gay couple to be able to live out your dream, like you were saying. And I think for us as the podcast as well, is giving you the opportunity to share your story as well, because we've got to be honest, we have never been approached by any same-sex couples who have experienced the loss of a baby. So therefore, this, in our opinion, and probably is a world first in regard to what we're able to offer to you as well, to give you a platform to be able to share your story, which ordinarily probably wouldn't be shared. So I just think that use of terminology, that love has no language, it's almost like that. That'll be the title of the podcast.
We felt it. She was and is like an angel on earth. And, you know, the grief that she, I can't speak for her, but, you know, you're already taking on this very risky thing to carry a child for someone else. She knew we were a gay couple. And that was really the impetus, from my understanding, is why she wanted to do this. So then you're carrying a baby that she didn't see through to the end. So I can't even imagine, you know, what she went through. And I trusted her. There was not even a second that I did not trust. We weren't even in the same country. And I knew my baby was in great hands, so to speak. Mm-hmm. For me also, I don't know. I didn't really have any gay friends who were having babies. Then that added a whole different layer, I think. It's like we were so into it. No, I was so proud to be like one of the only gay people I know to go through this.
What was the reaction from your from friends then? Or maybe from gay friends that you got who maybe, because of you and Manuel, have thinking about going down that route? Do you get asked a lot of questions?
Zero.
Really?
Really.
But they were also excited.
That's interesting.
I always say Josephine was going to have like a slew of uncles.
Right.
Right away. Who were so excited. So I see just the heartbreak in them as well. Like it was their baby also. Yeah. And maybe it was there the only time that they were going to have like their closest friends were going to have a baby.
Yeah.
And that they would... You know, I always want everyone over and having dinner here. So I just thought my family's just going to grow even more.
I mean, I don't know what it's like over in the US, which is why I'm about to ask you this question. But is there a stigma attached with gay men or gay women having children? Is there a stigma around it or not?
Listen, lesbians have babies every 5 minutes.
Right.
That's the other title of the show.
Which is beautiful. It's beautiful. I think men, listen, it's a process. Mm. It's a whole different process. And I think, I don't know, I think everything is polarizing in the United States. I almost, after we lost Josephine, I thought maybe because we're gay. Like that went through my head.
Wow, okay. Yeah.
But I just don't think it's on people's radars.
Yeah,
You do see the family, you do see those families, you do. Yeah. No stigma against it. I always think, people are pumped when they see gay guys having a baby. Mm. Like that was my feelings. Everyone was so excited for us. You know, we had our our baby shower and our baby shower on a Saturday. And my husband's a photographer. And we had it at his studio and it was full of people. There was like everybody, gay, straight. Everyone was as excited, maybe 50 people as we were. Mm. And then 2 days later, we got this devastating news. That's the movie.
And you know what? That right there shows, again, comes back to the speed of everything, doesn't it?
You know, and you say this a lot, and it's
and
so
how,
yeah.
And how far the emotions are apart. You've had that day, which is full of hope, and happiness, and all the people involved. And the thing about it is, and Ryan, I remember Ryan saying this very early on when we lost Callie, and I think he might have even said it directly to me, but he said that it's like dropping the pebble into the flat lake and it just ripples out. And so all those 50 people, how many people were there, were invested in this. And then 2 days later, they are also invested in, right? It's nuts, man.
Yeah.
And we, you know, we were 8 months pregnant when we decided to do the shower. And then I then put a post up on Instagram. You are so excited. I could have screamed it to the mountain. I told everyone at every open house, a baby came in, you know, I work in real estate.
Yeah.
I would, oh my God, I'm having a baby in a month. And then, this happened on a Saturday. Sunday, we went back to his studio to organize all the presents and get excited. Monday, we live in a duplex. We were set to switch floors to have a nursery for Josephine and then move our bedroom. And while I was packing up to move, I got a phone call that to me was no pebble. It was a mountain into a calmest lake ever.
Yeah.
And I thank God for Manuel because he handled the rest from there.
I was going to ask, were you guys together when you had that phone call?
No. So I remember I was up here. This is, you know, our second floor home office, but also guest room. And I was packing up here and I got this a phone call was coming from Mexico City and it was our coordinator, our journey coordinator number. So I answered and he said, and he told me that, you know, Miriam didn't feel well.
Yeah.
And Josephine had been very active always and moving and she didn't feel well, Miriam. So she went to the clinic and they did an ultrasound and they found that there was no heartbeat. And again, we were 8 months pregnant. This was not something I ever even heard of. And he had to say it a few times to me. And I think I apologized to him. I didn't even know what to say. Then I hung up the phone. Manuel was at work. And I thought, maybe that was a prank call. Like maybe that's like you hear these terrible scam calls. Maybe that's what that's what it is.
Yeah.
So then I realized it wasn't. So I had to call Manuel and I said, there's no heartbeat. And that was, I think the first thing I said, the only thing I really could say, I think. And he said, what are you talking about? And I said, Miriam found out they found out there's no heartbeat. Josephine doesn't have a heartbeat. And, he thought I was lying or kidding.
Yeah.
I think also you don't know what to think. So then he was an hour away and I waited on the couch for him to come home. And, you know,
I can't imagine what being told that news would be like where you're so far away and having to be told that over the phone and you're not in the room at that time. Because I know what that felt like being told that news when I was in the room with my wife. I would imagine there is a feeling of utter helplessness because you're so far away. No control, lack of control, loss of control. Like you were saying there, Manuel was an hour away and you're having to wait for him. But not only that, you've worked so hard to bring Josephine to life. And what I mean by that is to have a baby through a surrogate. The silence must be deafening.
It was, it just felt so unfair. I didn't get it. I try to be a good person.
It just, you know what, and I hate to be this crude about it, but it's just fucking shit, man. And it really is. It just, however long I've been on this journey and however many people I've spoken to and however many people I've met, I can never get past the unfairness of it.
The unfairness of it.
It's also the fact that, like, you know, as you'd said right at the start of this conversation, Christian, that you'd put seemingly what life wanted. You'd put everything in place. You'd got your career. You'd met the person you wanted to be with. You'd got your home. You'd got the life that you wanted to build, right? And then this was the final piece. And then it just all crashes down, right? And there is just, there's no words for it, is there? You know, there really
isn't. No, there's no words. And I wanted it so bad.
Right.
I wanted it so bad. To me, that's just the cruelty in it. Right. I come from a very big family. I watched everyone's babies. Literally, I was the first babysitter for 90% of the kids in my family. And without hesitation, I know that they trusted me wholeheartedly. So then when it was, now it's my turn.
Yeah.
It came naturally. And yeah. I know guys that it would be the greatest thing I would ever do.
Yeah.
And I knew I'd be great at it. And that's to me where the horror in all of this is why me? What did I do? We try to be good people. Of course, there's fault lines in every one's life. But it's still shocking. I will walk down the street and I, no joke, stop dead in my tracks and just say, why? I don't get it. Everyone says it gets easier. To me, I don't know. It's getting harder every day. I think reason being is that it just becomes more and more real every day.
Yeah.
And now it's maybe I'm out of the shock and now, or maybe now I'm in the shock, but I think it's just the reality just sinks in. It's palpable. And I wasn't pregnant. I didn't have a belly. Not everyone in my building saw me, knew we were having a baby. So then I almost feel like you kind of then feel forgotten. And I don't know, I don't know if they don't realize that you're still a parent.
Yeah.
That, you know, you had a baby. It's just, I always wanted a baby. I always just didn't, like I said, I didn't think it through to also wanting to bring her home.
Have you spoke to Miriam since? Or is there any relationship still with you guys? Because I can't help but think she must feel an element of guilt.
Oh, so when we found out Manuel came home, I didn't know what to do. Do we go there? Do we? I don't know what they do with the baby. We didn't know anything.
Yeah.
So right away, boom, he sits on the computer where I am right now and he books us to go to Mexico City the next day. And in that moment, it was like, he's a great father.
Yeah.
We are going to be there come hell or high water. We are going to be with our baby. So we got there and, Manuel speaks Spanish, like I said, you know, everyone speaks English, all the doctors and everything, but it was easy, I think, for them to just communicate, or maybe they didn't want me to hear because they saw how fragile I was.
Yeah.
So they said, you know, her umbilical cord got wrapped around her little neck twice. And they did a C-section. Manuel had asked him he wanted to see it. So Manuel saw the C-section to see what happened. I couldn't watch it. And then they said to us, do you want to see your baby? Yeah. Which I didn't think was even an option. I didn't know what we were going to see. And so before that, you know, our first objective was to go and see Miriam. And again, that's where we really didn't speak the same language.
Yeah.
Because she at that time as well has got the hormonal challenges of
and she lost our baby. I can't imagine them putting that on top of it. So then she and I know she loved that baby as much as we did.
Yeah.
We're then grieving in two different languages just by looking at each other.
Mm. Wow.
And Manuel was, you know, beautifully said, you know, how just thanking her that she did nothing wrong, that, you know, she helped you know, carry this dream almost to the end. And we didn't blame her in any way. This is just a terrible freak accident.
So to be blunt with this, what did they record as the reason for the loss?
Just her, she got caught up in her umbilical cord.
Right.
And it wrapped, so they said maybe sometimes it's common that it wraps around once. And then in our case, it wrapped around twice because she was perfect.
Yeah.
Mm. Even holding her, she was my baby. Mm.
So you did afterwards then, because it's something that comes up quite a bit with people's decisions and always happy that they did.
Do we want to see her? And I didn't know that was a possibility. And absolutely. And, you know, this is the trickiest part. They say, you know, we got in scrubs and, you know, everyone says they hold their baby and their heart explodes. So we went in the room.
Take all the time you need.
And there she was, wrapped beautifully.
Were you offered any support?
No. You know, your heart cracks with, at the moment I saw her, our hearts exploded with love. But then it was intertwined with heartbreak because she's not alive. Mm. And she looked like me. Oh. The sounds that we made, I didn't know was possible. Mm. Which I think was literally guttural sounds of your heart breaking, coming out of your body. And in the background, I heard babies crying, which was beautiful in a way that in that sheer little moment, I still knew that this was possible.
Yeah.
I'm holding my baby who didn't make it, but I hear babies in the background. So I know that it is possible. It was possible.
With a lot of our guests that we've had, UK guests, and interesting to hear, it's the same there too. After being in a room after your loss, and then you can still hear the other babies crying from different families, and how that resonates in different ways with different particular guests. And one that always rings out was, there was one hospital which actually had like a bell, didn't it? Do you remember that?
That was in America.
Was that the one in America?
I can't remember the guy's name. But
so there was a big bell that would get rang whenever a delivery had been made. But the room where the parents were who just lost was literally the room right next to the bell, which didn't make a lot of sense to me at the time. Like, that hadn't been thought. Your face right now says everything. Yeah,
they were grieving, and the bell would go off.
How are you and Manuel now? And is this, because it's still recent, isn't it? I mean, it's very recent. Are you at a stage yet where, or have you discussed maybe trying again? Where's your mindset at?
It's made us so much closer as a couple. We're extremely close to begin with. It's really nice to see that it brought us even closer together. I'll take blame for it. And I, because he's so good, he would do really anything I ask. We tried pretty soon thereafter again, and they didn't stick. We tried two. He said, we can't do this, which I totally get it. You know, I was trying to, you want it to happen. I want it to happen again right away because I was supposed to have my baby home. Then I have to do this whole thing again. And, you know, someone said earlier, it was just planned to happen. This was planned to happen. And what happened was just not planned. So, and then I also think it's such a, I don't know, I sort of get offensive right away when people are saying, are you going to do it again? Or you guys can do it again. Or thank God you have all those embryos. And it's almost just, you know, negating this extreme loss we're going through, and that we had a baby. I don't want to discount her.
Yeah.
We had a baby. I want to talk about her. Even though tears come out, a lot of the time I am talking about her, it's really important to talk about her. I think, A, it's good to get it out of your system, I think. But B, no one talks about it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until this happened, I, you know, started a new job in December, and it was like the first Christmas party, and I happened to know people at my new company, and someone made a beeline for me, and I was doing well.
Yeah.
It's like the first time I felt really good. I got a new job. I was really excited. I was feeling great at this Christmas party. This woman makes a beeline for me at the bar, and she said, "Oh my God, Christian, I heard what happened. It happened to my daughter." And it just totally caught me off guard. And I thought really quick, I was like, why are you bringing this up now? And then at the same point, I was like, I need to talk about this with her. This is the moment where she's able to tell somebody, to talk to somebody about it. And I'm now here to listen to her. And I didn't have anyone who could listen to me.
Yeah.
I still don't.
And that's mad, because she might not have ever, obviously, if you hadn't have gone through your loss, she wouldn't have had the opportunity to come over and have, because you're going through that process too and be heard. Yeah.
Yeah. And people don't talk about it. That's what's so horrifying about this is I didn't even know this was a possibility.
I want to just very quickly jump on something that you just said there, is that you still don't have people who are there to listen to you and to offer you the support and stuff like that. And I think I know we're based in the UK, but we've actually got people within our group who are all over the world. We've got, I've forgotten his name, that's in Dubai.
Oh, Gareth. Gareth yes. Wilson.
And so we actually have a dad's WhatsApp group, which has got over 130, 140 blokes in it. And it's, listen, we can add you to that. This is the beauty now of everything being linked and joined and technologies that we can put you in that group, which we're all part of. And if there's questions you want to ask, or if you just get comfort by looking at what other people say or things like that, that's there for you. And hopefully that'll just bring a little bit of comfort to you as well, knowing that there's another 100 plus blokes in that group who have lost a baby.
And you're not alone.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in that group who, it doesn't mean you have to be active, you know, and talk. Some people just use it as something to look at.
Support.
Yeah, right. Support. Matt does it when he's on the toilet. We know when Matt, because all of a sudden we'll just get loads of messages.
Yeah.
So, I think a lot of the dads will, because obviously it's a big group and it can be off at all times of day. So you just get added to it, stick it on mute. And then when you want to go through it, just open it up. And that way you won't get woken up at 4 a.m. with, it's there when you need it.
I think it's beautiful that men are grieving. Mm.
Yeah.
I think it's needed. I don't think men were allowed to grieve. I think it's a beautiful thing.
Well, it's outdated stereotypes, isn't it?
Yeah, it's insane. Yeah. It's insane.
Absolutely.
I mean, after this happened, we're in Mexico City, reeling days after, and people in my family, I was texting them to see how they were doing.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah, it was. I've said that about my situation as well, where we went back to my wife's parents' house after we'd found out on a Friday evening. And it was about 6 o'clock in the evening. And then we went back to her parents' house on about 8 o'clock. And a lot of the family and friends came round. And they were all absolutely distraught. And we found that it was me and Amy comforting everybody. Yeah, it was our daughter that had just died. It was like, hang on a second. It's like the roles have just completely and utterly reversed here.
I remember you saying that. I wonder why that is. Like, what kind of, is it just a way of like your brain maybe subconsciously trying to go into a different mode?
I think knowing that we had to go back into hospital 2 days later.
Yeah.
I think a lot, but it's probably a little bit of protection for yourself as well.
It has been mentioned a few 100%. Times now. Yeah.
And
100%. I think then, and then when you need them to start asking how you are, you kind of really don't always hear from them.
Yeah. No, I totally
I think
agree.
In the beginning, it's quick to say, how are you? How are you? And then I think as time goes by now, this is kind of the time I think people need to reach out to those who are going through this to see how they are doing. Like you said, 10 years?
Mm. 10 years.
10 years? Your baby, you still need people to ask how you're doing.
Mm. Yeah, I don't give them a choice at times. I'm like, I do, because I'm very vocal. I've always been very vocal about Callie. Always, I'll talk about her on my socials, my Facebook. It's just how I've dealt with it. I've said in the past this very strongly, that if I hadn't have talked about Callie, I think I'd be in a very different position. But don't get me wrong. I've been through periods where you've said, like, it's me guiding the conversation rather than someone finding out about me. But then also I now realize that those people that still want to know about Cali are still around me, and the ones that aren't.
Exactly. I mean, it's amazing to me that the people that you don't hear from, that I'm a nice person, and that shocks me. It just shocks me how people handle grief. I don't think people know what to say, but I don't think that's a good excuse. I think you just need to say something.
Just try.
Because you feel so forgotten, and then you feel like your baby is jilted. That's how I always feel, like that she didn't even matter.
She does. She absolutely does, and she will forever. Yeah. Simple as that.
Absolutely.
You know?
I've learned from this is it's just from, you know, someone who hasn't lost, but speaking, you know, as I say, Christian, these two are two of my closest friends now. You might say the wrong thing, but as long as you're not doing it with that intent, and just be sincere. Ask a question.
Just a little bit of common sense.
Even if you start out with something stupid, I don't care. Yeah, as long as you say something, even if it's a little stupid, it's then just wanting to start something with you.
Yeah.
Now, I, in a way, my personality, I can sort of then dictate where we're going and make them feel better about them telling me to feel better.
You see, there we go again. That means you're the one actually going, are they all right in this conversation? What can I do to make them feel more comfortable?
It's interesting because at Callie's funeral, obviously Big Jemiah, who's now, I've talked about it long. Jemiah came and saw Callie in the hospital off his own back and decided he was going to do it. I remember leaving the church and he was waiting outside after Callie's funeral because he came and he was in bits and he just went, Matt, are we going to be all right? We're going to be all right, aren't we? I was like, I've no idea, Jemiah, but like, you know, let's just do this together and see where it goes. But he literally was in pieces. He's like, but he was putting it all out there, and he's like, "We're going to be okay." He was like,
"Is he the one from your football team that used to give you shit all the time?"
No, he's now the gaffer at Sutton. That's why I'm not working.
That's
with.
Right. Yeah. But
what I'm getting around to is the fact that at least he tried. Mm. That's all that you just want people to try, right? And I think sometimes trying is understated.
Let's make a fucking effort.
Yeah, it really is, you know. And then even if that person who you're dealing with and the person who is going through this only gives you minimal bits, that's fine. But at least you tried to find out how they are, right? You know?
The amount of people, guests that we've had on, again, it's another, a lot of the themes that we have, and they become themes just through the repetition is, and Matt's had it as well, I think you've alluded to it, is it's not the people that you expect to come over and... Yeah. Check in on you and be in your life. All of a sudden, it might be that friend who's on the periphery, maybe more of an acquaintance than a friend. All of a sudden, just goes steps up, and you're like, "Whoa!"
Yeah,
I had someone call me. I had someone call me the other day. I was leaving work, and I didn't recognize the number, but I answered it, and she said, she said, "Hi, Christian, it's so and so," and I haven't talked to her in 12 years.
Wow!
She said, since I saw or heard about what happened to Josephine, I wanted to reach out to you. Yeah. And it left such an impression and made me feel so good that, and I said, I just feel like, thank you for thinking about Josephine. Mm. Like, thank you for thinking about us. Thank you for thinking about my family. This is when I do need to hear from people.
Mm, right.
And I think people think maybe, I don't know, for you, you know, I still need people to ask and I still want to talk about it. And I'm still going through this and, you know, I am forever changed.
There we go.
So to what as you guys say, your bloke asked you, are we going to be okay? Yeah, you're going to be okay. You're just going to be different.
Mm. Did he just try and be English then and say bloke?
Kind of fit in.
I love it. Because I've been trying to put it off all episode just to go, how are you doing? Sorry, I've got it out of my system now.
Go for it.
No. I just think having you, as it's been pointed out, having you on, Christian, is just the, it's just fast. It, I say it really loosely, but it's a fascinating kind of look at this as well, because I think it's coming across an educational point of view as well, right?
I personally hope that this isn't the only time that we have you on the podcast, Christian, if I'm completely honest with you, because I think you've spoken extremely well. You've certainly done your little girl proud sharing your story. And I mean, I've learned a lot today. I have learned a lot. And I think that's the thing with baby loss is that baby loss is not one size fits all. It's different for every single person, even though the devastation and the aftermath is still the same for everybody, but everybody's grief differs. But the then it combines in the end to the fact that we've all still lost what is a much wanted baby. Whether you're heterosexual, whether you're gay, it doesn't make any difference whatsoever. You wanted your daughter.
Grief doesn't discriminate. That's what we've yep. what
no
at all, is it?
Yeah.
Well, I'm interested to know. I know you are 5 months in now, in a sense, but what kind of things do you do to honor Josephine? Is anything that you do? Is there, or do you just live each day knowing that she's part of you, right? Is it it's an interesting thing, because I think as you go through this journey, you start to figure out, and it's a big question that we get as people who work with parents on a day-to-day basis. What can I do to remember my baby, you know?
Yeah, well, I got a tattoo.
Love that. There we go. Well, Ryan's...
now we're talking.
Yeah, I've got one as well, but Ryan's covered in them.
I always said I'm never getting a tattoo. There's nothing that I want on my body enough to want it there forever. Well, I wouldn't take this J off for anything in the world.
Love it.
Where is the tattoo?
Right.
I got it. Oh, yes. On the forearm. It.
Yeah. Love that.
I googled what.
Yeah,
what
I've got mine
hurts
there.
Least.
Yeah. So that's one thing. Yeah, that's lovely, isn't it? You know, it is. And
so, you know, I always knew that Josephine was going to be her name.
Yeah.
Okay. I had a nanny growing up from Ireland from when I was, I think, a month until I was 11. Yeah. And I always say she was my soulmate.
Yeah.
And her name is Josephine.
Right.
Okay.
So my baby's with my nanny, who she's taking care of her until I get there.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So I went to Catholic school. I then went to public school and, you know, having an adversarial relationship with the Catholic Church. I was a fallen Catholic. And I've definitely tapped back into religion
from this
because I just need to know that she's somewhere.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
You know, we went to a church here in Brooklyn where it's a gay priest and he did the funeral service. So I go as, you know, I go on Sundays and I know I don't really believe in a lot that they're saying, but I'm there because that's where Josephine is. Mm. And I feel her there for an hour. Yeah. So that's where religion has come back into my life, is just knowing that I will see her again.
Yeah.
I do believe that.
Yeah. I love that. That's beautiful.
I talked to her. I yelled at her a few times. And, you know, I just love her. And I think that's the hardest part, is just loving something so much more than anything in the whole world that's just not here. And people don't get to see you love this person so much. So it's loving something in silence.
Was there any, or did you face, or are there, it's interesting just to see the different attitudes in the different countries and with gay communities here in the UK compared to, like we say, we haven't talked about surrogacy before, but were there, and what challenges did you and Manuel face in the process of trying to, was there any obstacles in the way, or was everything just being as the way it should be?
Yeah, everything was as the way it should
Good.
Be. I mean, we're from New York, which is its own world.
Yeah.
You know, the gay mafia lives in New York, so we're okay.
We're okay.
How you doing? Oh,
yeah. There he is. But it's good. I mean, attitudes have changed, you know, in the right direction a lot, especially accelerated over the last hopefully 10, 15
years. Here in New
York.
Yeah. Here in New York. Not every state allows same-sex surrogacy.
Well, especially in the country.
Adoption. So it's bananas.
Yeah. I think, I mean, there's a couple of pointers I want to just read out for our listeners, because I think it's just important that our listeners know the difference between the sort of surrogacy laws within the US or Mexico and the UK, because they do differ quite significantly. The UK permits only sort of altruistic, non-enforceable arrangements. So it's actually not legal to be able to pay to have surrogacy within the UK, whereas I know that obviously is a lot different within the US, Mexico, and other countries as well around the world. And the surrogate is actually the legal mother at birth in the UK, as well as the surrogate's partner as well at that time. So they're therefore you would have to have what's called a post-birth parental order. But mm-hmm. many US states allow commercial, paid and legally enforceable contracts with sort of pre-birth orders, establishing intended parents' legal rights sort of immediately from birth as well. So that's how it sort of differs very, very, quite a lot actually between the US and UK. And the UK, like I say, prohibits commercial surrogacy, but and you're only allowed to sort of pay for reasonable expenses, whereas it's obviously different over there as well. You can actually pay for a surrogate to have a baby for you. So I just want it, we just need to put that out from a from a sort of information perspective for our listeners, so that they don't feel that the same laws apply over here in the UK as they do in US. But again, it's a learning curve, and I've really enjoyed.
Did you know about this before today?
I knew of certain things, but again, it, like I say, every day is a school day for me.
It's like, so Mexico City, where we were, we would then have to stay there for about a month to 6 weeks post-birth because the surrogate there is the birth mother until, I mean, she's already signed her rights away.
Yeah.
But in order to then get Manuel on the paperwork, get her off the paperwork, you have to be there for 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. So there's, which is...
It's fascinating. It is,
interesting.
Yeah, it is.
But it'll be interesting to see if there's different, because we've got a lot of a decent size audience. So after America, our next biggest audience is in Australia. So it'll be interesting to see if there's any differences there too.
But what I do like is that there is an opportunity for gay men to be able to have a baby.
Yeah.
And for people to, you know, like you say, be surrogates for yourself, Christian, and Manuel, giving you the opportunity to live your dreams.
Yeah, no, it's beautiful. It's amazing, beautiful, and you know, it's a very Catholic country, Mexico. So I'm sure going into it, she had, I bet, people in her family saying, "Why are you doing this? And why are you doing this for them? And this and that." And then look what happened to her. You know, she was getting probably, I can't speak 100%, but I bet you there are some people who are a little pushing back on this. She did have her own family and children and a partner. And and then it was all for naught. Or not for us, but maybe looked at upon by them. You know, what'd you do this for? Now look what your body's going through.
So
what she did was beautiful. What any surrogate does is absolutely amazing. And yes, they get paid, but no amount of money is enough.
Well, money, listen, as you know, Nat, Christian, money doesn't matter when it comes to this, does it? Right? You know, it's irrelevant. All the material stuff in your life, it's all irrelevant, isn't it? You know, it is.
Oh my God. I'll tell you a funny story. The day we found out, we're downstairs. Manuel's up here making flight arrangements. I just went and booked at any hotel in Mexico City with my points. You know, I'm going to be cheap at that moment. So we stayed in there the first night. We got there late, so we weren't going to see her till the next day. And I couldn't sleep all night. Of course, we're like in the throes of grief, obviously. But I thought, I cannot bring my baby girl back to this hotel. This is not where I'm bringing her back to. Yeah. So we happened to be walking around. We passed like the fanciest hotel in Mexico City, which is beautiful, by the way, if you've never been. And I went into the lobby and I said, we want to book a room. And she probably thought like by the hour, just the way that we came in there, first in there. And she said she has these two. She has this room and then the penthouse. And I was like, Manuel, let's not go crazy. We'll take this room, lower level room. We went in there. And as soon as we were in there, and I thought, nope, I am not bringing my daughter into this hotel. Yeah. So we went back down. We got the penthouse, the most expensive hotel we've ever had in our entire life. And it was worth every penny. Money did not matter. My daughter is getting the best. Yeah. She's getting a penthouse apartment and a penthouse hotel. And she slept in a king size bed in between us and her cute little box.
I love it.
There you go.
It's right. It's exactly right. And
I didn't care.
No, because at that point, and even moving forwards, it's material things just sail into the distance, don't they? You know, they really do.
I left work a few months later. I thought at the company I was with, I was miserable going there. I thought, no, what am I doing? Yeah. What am I doing?
Yeah.
And the first time I ever felt again was when I started my new at my new with my new team. I just felt I was happy going to work, and then made sense. Why am I going to grieve at home and then go to work and I'm grieving being at work? It did not make sense to me. So there's no silver lining to this. The only little thing I can see is that it propelled me to put into perspective what was important and to just get rid of the excess fat that was just a non-necessary thought.
So it kind of brings us full circle, really, for when you started, because we haven't mentioned, and just to kind of give you that outline, especially with what you do and go into, so you work in real estate, so showing people around a property, especially if they're, you know, as is often the case, families looking for somewhere with their first arrival, and that must have been, forgive my language, fucking ridiculously hard.
And no
wonder it led to you. So are you doing the same thing now, but it's a different company, or is it just
different company?
Right. Okay. Company.
But to say what you're saying, I work in Brooklyn, which is, you know, pretty much a family area of New York City.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky that I sell nice properties, and they tend to be purchased by families and budding families.
Yeah.
And my first weekend back at work, I was showing this beautiful apartment. This gay couple came in, and nice guys, and we're chatting, and they said, are there any other babies in the building? Any other kids in the building? And you know, there are not. And they said, oh, great. Maybe we'll be the first ones. And I said, oh, you guys are having a baby. They said, oh yeah, we have a surrogate.
Oh,
she's having her baby in June. And in that moment, I lost it. I lost it. Tried to do my best. I had to, you know, Matt, I then just told them I couldn't not. I want them to think I was crazy. So I told them what happened. They were like, you know, besides themselves. And I left, and I called Manuel right away, and I said, you know, I felt jealous. Like, it was a terrible feeling. I felt jealous. And then it really clued in. I wasn't jealous. I just remember the excitement that they are in that I was in so recently. I remember that excitement of wanting to buy a home because you're having your baby and it's coming, and they know the due date and they know the, you know, the name and that, and it's been, you know, I take a deep swallow. I'm very lucky. My career is, I'm doing very well, but those Sunday open houses, I take a big gulp before I walk in, because I know that parents and babies are about to walk in the door for the next 5 hours.
It's, the world works in crazy ways, isn't it? It's just after everything that you've gone through, then you just happen to, you know, with the surrogate and almost the same situation just walks into your world. Did they buy the property in the end?
No,
bastards.
Because I was just thinking that part of my brain then wondered after you guys have gone your separate ways. Because they undoubtedly would have had a conversation about you and
100%.
The interaction you just had. So I was just wondering.
So it's funny. So they weren't into this place. They were lovely guys. And then they waited outside for me after.
Yeah.
And we talked there. And one of them just offered that his sister had happened to her a few times. And that, you know, his siblings also went through surrogacy and just had these terrible scenarios. And then, ironically enough, I'm selling another property. 2-3 bedroom, you know, perfect for family. And those guys came again.
Oh wow, really?
Yeah. It was nice to see them. And I, you know, of course, typical me, I apologize for having my little outburst. And they were awesome. They get it. And we needed to talk about it.
Yeah.
It probably wasn't professionally. I'm not doing that again. I learned my lesson. But I had to share it in the moment, or else I would have.
Maybe your paths were meant to cross for that reason. You
know? Totally.
Yeah.
And I was excited for them. You know, I was back to then feeling that, oh, this is awesome. Like, if you guys need help finding something, I'm your guy. And you know what they left me with, which was so sweet? They're looking at a place in my neighborhood. They said, we can't wait to see you on the playground. And it was just such a nice little way to part.
Christian, we could speak to you all day, which I'm sure you don't want to, especially considering what time we made you get up. But thank you. For anyone, by the way, who wants to find out more details about the surrogacy laws that Ryan was talking about, we'll put a link to a couple of articles that you can click on to read it in your own time.
Can I just say two quick things?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I'm running a half marathon in honor of Josephine. I know that you're running 10K every day. So I'm training for that. But I have this, you know, since this, your put in front of people that you never thought you'd meet before. And I'm close with someone from the Isla Jade Foundation, I-S-L-A, Jade Foundation. And what we do there is we raise money for something called Caring Cradles. And what they are is they are warming beds for when stillborn babies are born, that the babies are put in there and they are able to be with the family for a longer amount of time so people can have the proper way to say goodbye. And, you know, we talked about Pennsylvania in the beginning. I don't know if on or off mic, but they're donating a caring cradle at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia in honor of Josephine. So it's just a great organization. And we weren't able to benefit from having this, but please do your due diligence and look into them. And they're a great resource. And I'm happy to come and talk anytime.
Yeah, man.
Christian, thank you. Thank you so much. It's always feel a little bit strange asking this question, considering the reason why we're here. And we, you know, this is the podcast no one really should be on. But how do you feel now? It's always interesting to find out how our guests are feeling at the end compared to when the show was about to start. Because I think obviously, you know, a lot of people don't really know what to expect or how it's going to make them feel.
You know, I feel great. It's so important to talk about it. Through tears. You know, people are afraid maybe to see people cry. You need to talk about it. This is insanely important and unfortunately too common, and it's never talked about. It's never discussed. I, at 46 years old in 2026, should not have been shocked that a baby still can be stillborn.
Well said. Yeah. Is there anything that you haven't spoke about you'd like to mention or anything you want to bring up or ask these guys before we go our separate ways?
Let me just real quick. Did you guys have other children when this happened?
Yeah, so I had a three-year-old when we lost Lily, and then we've been fortunate to go on and have another three children. So we had a little boy, Freddie, who was born 14 months after we lost Lily. And then we had two girls who are now 11 and 9.
Amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, and we Callie was our firstborn, but we've gone on to have Etta, who's 9 in October this year. So she was...
How was that? I don't know if it's harder or easier, but to not have a baby.
It's crazy, isn't it? Because we've talked about this, you know, the differences. And the fact is that, you know, just through circumstance, there's two people in the room who've lost but have got different circumstances as far as living children when they're lost and not having a child when they're lost. But to be honest with you, mate, it was the toughest thing I've ever faced because it was our firstborn. She was our firstborn. We were ready to go. We were right there. We were, you know, like yourselves in that moment, family-wise, ready, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it was, you know, incredibly, incredibly tough. And that's why, as I said before, I will embarrass Etta one day and tell her how important she is to us because she doesn't realize how important she is. And yeah.
Does she know why you're running every single day? Does she think you're a bit crazy? Like, Dad, where are you going?
No.
Again?
She
Have you and Mommy had an argument? Is that why you keep going out?
Yeah, she does. And actually, Tuesday is her first sibling focus group meeting.
Oh, yes.
So yeah, she'll be...
She's buzzing for that.
She'll be in the office here.
See how proud you are that she's coming in for that. Remember when you mentioned it last time.
She's our little rainbow, like Freddie's... Ryan and Amy's rainbow.
I think that's my fear, is not having that rainbow.
Yeah. And I think for any lost parent, that is a huge, huge moment of feeling and it's completely normal.
Yeah.
It really, really is. It's normal.
I also think as well is that if you believe that you're going to have that moment and that's what's in your plan of wanting to move forward and wanting to have that moment, you need to really hold on to that and not let it go until it happens.
Yeah.
Because I strongly believe that you will get that opportunity.
Yeah.
Even though you've had, like you said, you've had those two failed...
Transfers.
That's the word I was looking for. Yeah. You've had the two failed transfers, is that you clearly want that. Mm. You clearly have a lot of love to give, and you clearly have a plan of what you want within your family. And I have no doubts that you will not give up until you get there.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And always remember,
I will run in honor of your kids when I run this half marathon. And thanks for sharing that with me.
And always remember as well, Christian, that you and Manuel are our parents, your fathers.
I think that's the hardest, that's the most beautiful and the most heartbreaking thing tied in.
Mm, but you are. Don't ever let anyone tell you you're not. You know?
Thank you.
Yeah. Otherwise, Matt will come round and tell him. And hence, that's why, you know, Still Parents podcast. It's exactly that.
Yeah.
You've been absolutely
wonderful.
Yeah, I can't speak highly enough. I can't find the words to fully describe it. I think you've been great. And if you ever would like to come on, like Ryan said, we'd love to get you back on at some point. Maybe
anytime.
Maybe get to meet Manuel if
anytime
as well. That's great. That's Christian Haig from Brooklyn, New York. I feel like I need to do something New York now today. So I'm going to go and get a bagel and watch an episode of Friends.
Hot dog. Eat your hot dog.
Stop it.
Hot dog.
Hot dog.
Hot dog.
Dog.
Can you do an English accent, Christian? Just say
no. I won't be invited back.
Don't worry, you will. That's the British sense of humour. All you got to do is just put the word mate on the end of everything you say.
Mate. Yeah. Blokes.
I listened to the American US politics podcast and you sound like Anthony Scaramucci.
Oh, Lord Almighty.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, just showed his son an apartment, which is funny you say that.
Say again?
Wow.
Oh, really?
I just showed his son an apartment.
Wow, really?
Scaramucci Jr.
Scaramucci Jr. Oh. There you go.
That's a proper New York
Anthony Scaramucci. Scaramucci.
Yeah, that's the only one we get over here, which starts with S, is Smith.
Smith, yeah, John Smith. Smith is the English. Yeah.
Anyway, to round off this podcast today, here's Christian telling us all his thoughts on Donald Trump.
And again.
Oh, God.
No,
I won't be able to have a baby. They'll put an X on my head.
Yeah.
Like never before.
Trust me, we've got a complete Wally in charge of us as well.
You do got Prince Andrew over there.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
That bloke is a wrong un.
Yikes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys.
Christian, and we will speak to you again no doubt very very soon. This is the Still Parents podcast. All the details, like we say, description below, go and click on that now, along with links to episodes that we've talked about in today's episode, and information that Ryan mentioned about the surrogacy laws and everything, all in the description there. Download our app, have a look on our socials. Instagram's the best one, Still Parents podcast, and we will be back very very soon. Thank you, Ryan.
Adios.
Thank you, Matthew.
See you guys.
And thank you so much again, Christian.
Thank you.
Take care, everyone. Goodbye.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.